Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode is with Chris Bow of Vampire Weekend. And not only of Vampire Weekend, Chris is just about to, well, when we're recording this on the 15th of December, and the album comes out in January, his new solo record. And we had a catch-up over Zoom, and it was a wonderful chat. You're about to hear that. A few thank yous before we get on with that. I'd like to thank Scroobius Pip and all my friends at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thank you to 76 for producing this podcast. And if this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, once you've got to the end of my chat with Chris, go and have a look in the archives, because you can check out chats with, well, there's over 200 now, and you can hear me talking to the likes of Tommy Lee, Chuck D, Suede, James Lavelle, Mel C, Rag and Bone Man. There's an abundance of chats with some amazing creative people. So when you're done with this episode, go and have a rummage in the archives. Better still, subscribe. Then they just pop up on your listening device every week. And if you'd like to support the podcast, I also put up 4 radio shows each week, as well as video episodes and bonus content as well on a Patreon. So for those that don't know what Patreon is, it's like another sort of social media feed, really. And it means you can support creative sort of ventures. So as this is a labour of love, I've set up the Patreon to run alongside it. So if people would like to get the extra content, then they can kind of pledge a little bit of money towards the podcast, and you can find out all about it, and the 200 or so episodes in the back catalogue of the general releases as well. You can find out about all of this stuff at Off the Beat and Track Podcast. That's beat and not beaten. beatandtrackpodcast.com. Should we get on with today's episode? Let's do that. Please enjoy Off the Beat and Track Podcast with Chris Bao.
It's Off the Beaten Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay, we are recording. Sitting opposite me today via the means of Zoom, Chris Bow, hello.
Hey, how's it going, Stu?
It's all good. It's all good. So, before we get chatting records, I just want to ask you, I mean, firstly, whereabouts are you Zooming from? Where are you?
I am in Oregon right now, on the Pacific Ocean. I got a place here a couple months ago, so spending some time in a fairly remote part of the country. It's been nice.
Well, I mean, we spoke briefly before we started recording, and I was saying about we're recording today at a time when the UK is about to go into another kind of level of lockdown. So I just want to ask you how you found 2020 as Chris the human being and as a creative.
Yeah, I will say I feel very, very lucky to have been kind of equipped to weather what was a challenging year and be lucky enough that, like, I can just stay at home and don't need to go out to make money or expose myself or others to the virus. So, like, at the forefront, I would just say that I feel very lucky that I'm in that position. when I got home, so I had a very busy year last year where I was touring for the Vampire Weekend record, Father of the Bride came out. And at the same time, I was making my new record, which is coming out in January, called Dead Hand Control. And I had never really, like, toured and made a record at the same time. So when I got home from Australia, we did an Australian tour over the New Year's. When I got home in January, I just felt very, like, worn down and pretty, like, tired. So, and that's never been the case before. You know, now I turned 36 a month and a half ago. I'm a little bit older. I mean, I've been touring since I was 22 years old, and I've never, like, felt so tired coming home from a tour. So when things started getting canceled, I felt, like, on just a personal day-to-day level and how I feel, I felt okay. I was just, like, because of this kind of, like, exhaustion, I was pretty fine with staying at home. I didn't really miss touring. I guess now I feel differently now, you know, we're recording this in the middle of December, and, like, you know, I have this record coming out, and normally you'd be making plans and thinking about where you're going to go and getting in rooms and sharing the music that you made with other people. And I do find now that I do, I miss playing and I miss touring, but it's taken me 7 or 8 months to get there. And I think I'm lucky in that regard. I definitely feel for so many musicians who made records who didn't get to tour this year. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk records. And for track one, Chris, I'm going to ask you the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro, please.
Yes, my answer to this is More Than This by Roxy Music.
Nice.
Which I think just... I thought about it for a while this morning, and... that was the song that first came to mind of a great intro, but I felt like I needed to kind of, like, check. I needed to be sure. I can only have one greatest intro ever, and I've never been asked this question before. So I put it on, and I listened to the first 20 seconds, and I said, you know what? I feel good about this. This is an absolutely incredible intro. I think it's sort of... I mean, Roxy Music is my favorite band of all time, and I find that their journey... from, you know, the first records, really, really arty, you know, with Brian Eno being in the band on the first two, middle period, and then end. I find their journey so fascinating, and obviously it ends with Avalon. It's the last record, and it's a very, you know, you could see them pointing in that direction in the two records before that, but it really does kind of stand on its own as far as its sound. And I do think it's sort of... stands on its own as far as records go. There's no other record that I can think of that really evokes these certain feelings in me. And, like, the first 20 seconds of that, just the kind of, like, the expansiveness, the, like, the glory of it, the, you know, huge-sounding drum fill, and then, like, Brian Ferry singing just completely differently from how he had earlier in his career, and like even, you know, just like the little interval, like people don't write melodies like that really, and it's like, it's almost like every single element of it feels like a hook, feels like a chorus. The drum fill feels like it could be a chorus. It's so memorable. The like first melody feels like it could be a chorus. So I don't know. I the first 20 seconds of it just are incredible to my mind. And I think there's like a reason why, you know, it still gets used. Roxy Music weren't a huge band in America, but it still gets used in commercials in America every year. And I think like it's because it's like withstood the test of time, and that intro is just so incredible. I think that's a big part of it.
You really broke down the first 20 seconds there. And so that's going to kind of lead me on to asking you, you know, you said you've been touring for, you know, a long, you know, many, many years now. And I just want to know, you know, since you first started sort of writing records to now, the way that people listen to music has probably changed quite a bit. And now, we live in a world full of streaming services and things like that. And has that affected how you approach songwriting, and specifically the intro, insofar as that whole kind of, said, you know, you said the hook's right there from the beginning with Roxy. And it was like, you know, I've had guests on that have said that, you know, I had OMD on, and they were talking about how in the UK now, if you don't have, the vocal doesn't come in within the first, I think it's 20 something seconds, you don't get on the radio. And he said Enola Gay would never have been played on the radio. And so I just wonder, like, you know, of all of these kind of things that have changed and evolved, like, how much is it affected, if at all, your writing process?
You know, it's interesting that you ask that. Because I tend to, when I work on at least my solo stuff, I really do think about the album as a whole and think about the journey. And, you know, this record is 8 songs long. And actually, the kind of like starting point for this record was that I wanted to have the least amount of songs as any of my solo records and have it be the longest of any of my solo records, right? So it has... one song is over 7 minutes, and 2 songs are over 9 minutes. So in that regard, it's like that's not being made with an eye towards a like streaming model, or like thinking about it being like a radio song. Like I think once you like reach a certain length of song, like to my mind, I don't know, I can't really think of a song that was 9 minutes long that in its entirety was a hit in like recorded music history. Like I think that was the case in the 60s, that's the case now. So I definitely, like, when I make tracks like that, I'm not really thinking about that. Having said that, like when I handed in this record to my label, I had it mixed, you know, I worked on this thing, you know, from like start to finish, it was about 2 years. They gave me like 3 bits of feedback. 2 were just to like put up a little bit of turn the sound up on certain little sounds in the mix. And then I had originally this kind of like 45 minute sound collage, like with kind of broken spoken Russian as the intro to the album, that was called, you know, the song is called Dead Hand Control. The album's called Dead Hand Control. And my label was like, listen, you can do what you want, but we think you should cut that 45 seconds because, like, when people hit play on the streaming service and it's all, like, confusing and stuff, that'll just lose their attention. And I thought about it for a long time, and I love my label. I think they're brilliant, and I love working with them. And so when they said that, I said, you know what, I'll do that. So I did do that. And I don't think, you know, they wouldn't have asked me to do that if I handed this record in 2008 or whatever, when the first Vampire Weekend record came out. So it definitely does affect me. And you know, in terms of what's around me in the world and what ends up getting like becoming popular on streaming services and things like that, it can't help but influence me one way or another, whether it's explicit or not. But that's like an example of an explicit thing of changing the way I make something because of the way streaming services are today.
Okay. For track 2, the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
I'll go, and this is kind of in a similar world to my first choice, but I'll go Once in a Lifetime by Talking Heads. And that one, I just remember, like, my parents loved this song so much, and I think that, you know, the lyrics are so iconic. I know that David Byrne had been listening to a lot of, like, American Christian radio in the heartland, the kind of, like, preacher energy.
Really?
Yeah, that was, it was him, I think him and Eno were driving around somewhere in America, and maybe he wasn't with Eno at that time, but I think he was, but he just, it was like very, influenced by a certain strand of, American religious speaking, and, it really shows when you listen to that
Charlie
record.
Charlie Figures, yeah.
And I think that the lyrics are just so iconic, and the, like, this is not my beautiful wife is just, like, such a funny lyric and such a funny way of viewing the world. But for me, I just associate that with that song with being, like, obviously there's so much going on that I couldn't wrap my head around when I was a little kid, but just being, like, 6 years old and being on family road trips and having that song played on repeat, it just, like, I think that... It's a very heavy song, and it's not like there's obviously so much going on, but like when I was a little kid, just like being in the back of the car yelling, "This is not my beautiful wife," it just like made this like immediate imprint on me. So it just, yeah, like I just, when I think of like first falling in love with music as like a little boy, that's like the song that I think of.
And so what would the emotion have been?
I would say the emotion would have been the joy of sharing music with people you love. Just being in a car with your family and listening to it. That's like when I think back to how I interacted with that song when I was 6 years old. That's kind of the community of it.
Yeah. Is it exactly the same for me? I remember like not just hearing it, but seeing like the video and seeing Stop Making Sense and just not being able to understand. It didn't compute. I was just watching the way that he moved, and I was like, "It's just not right. There's something strange about this." And like, and as a kid, you know, the strange is something that you're drawn to, I think. And I was just fascinated by it. Like, and that's just the visual, and then sonically, it just delivers it, you know, time and time again. Like, yeah, oh, great choice, absolutely great choice, Chris. Well, you mentioned that was on. In the car, you know, when you was like out in the, you know, traveling with your folks. What about home? Was there always records on growing up?
Oh yeah, definitely. My parents, like, I think there's a typical thing that can happen where people listen to music, then they have kids, and then they kind of stop following what's happening in new music. I think that's probably more the norm than otherwise. But, you know, my dad was a professional, a lawyer when I was growing up. My mom, you know, stayed home and raised me and my sister. But they both kept up on new music constantly. So when I think of, you know, when did I first hear of Nirvana? I heard of it when, like, my dad brought Nevermind home. Like, you know, my dad was the type of lawyer who would buy records and buy Nevermind and play it for his family. So... new music and like staying up on new music was something that like my dad always did and definitely like instilled a love of music in to me growing up. So I mean, I even think it's like when I was 8 years old or 9 years old, I got really into Bad Religion and like my dad.
8 year olds are getting into Bad Religion.
I know it is crazy and I think I was nine, but it was like. When Stranger Than Fiction came out, like 21st Century Digital Boy was like a song that was played on MTV at night, and like my dad loved it, and so he bought Stranger Than Fiction, and then I loved it like at that age, and like I would play that record for like this. I mean, this would be another example of like a early first emotion, but like yeah, like sharing Bad Religion with my friends when I was 9 years old, and that's because my dad brought that record home, you know.
That's a cool dad, Chris.
Yeah?
Yeah. All right. Well, let's stay in the formative years. For track three, I'm going to ask you the song that reminds you of your time at school, please.
I'm going to go with Down on the Corner by Creedence Clearwater Revival. And this was the hardest one I just had to think the most about it, but I started playing guitar when I was, I think, 12 years old or 13, and I would have played my first show ever when I was 14, and it would have been it was a girls' going away party. So I started playing music with my friends, like a couple friends, and we would cover songs. So we would cover like Nirvana, we would cover like pop punk songs and things like that. And the first show we played was a girls' going away party, and it's so funny, but I was, you know, like 14, 13 years old, so nervous before getting up on stage and playing. And it was like, it was a big party relative to my, it's like whatever, like 60 or 70 people. And my voice hadn't dropped. I hadn't gone through puberty yet. And the first song we played was a cover of Aneurysm by Nirvana. And, you know, I don't know how well you remember the specifics of that song, but it's like loud and abrasive. And at the end, like Kurt Cobain just like screams, like there's just like this agonized cry. And I did that in front of like singing just like shit, like doing it in front of my peer. And like everybody just kind of just like applauded politely. We like went through like, and we covered a bunch of songs. I mean, we covered a bunch of like alt radio hits at the time. Like we covered Lightning Crashes by Live, like stuff like that. I think we did a Radiohead song. And it was just kind of like people were being polite. And then we covered, because it's like a simple guitar riff song. We covered, we played Down on the Corner. And when we played that, all of a sudden, like all these girls came in front of the stage and started dancing. And like, we're really into that one song specifically. I think it's, you know, there are probably like cultural reasons based on the town that I grew up in, like why people really wanted to dance to that one. But so we played that one song, everybody danced, and then, you know, whatever, we went up probably to some like random punk song after that, and everybody like sat back down. And like, we played a long ass show when I think about it, like probably 2.5 hours. And like towards the end, everybody was like, oh, play Down on the Corner then again, play Down on the Corner again. And so we did, and everybody danced again. And I guess I kind of, like, thinking back on it, it was, like, very informative of, like, the importance of pleasing a crowd. Like, that's obviously, yeah, like, an element of it. So, I don't know. Like I think about, like, who your audience is and that kind of stuff. And that was, like, a lesson I learned very early on from that song.
Did you enjoy school, Chris?
I did. I mean, there were probably times where I didn't, or I would be sad. But overall, it's made friends there that I still, you know, in this Zoom era, I have a weekly call with my childhood friends. And so like now looking back on it, and, you know, you grow and you learn so much, obviously, by necessity. So like I look back on it pretty fondly now, even if there were, you know, times where I probably would have said I hated it when I was growing up.
Did you know what you wanted to be when you was at school?
It really depended. It's kind of weird in the sense that when I was 16, I wanted more than anything to be a professional musician. Then when I went to university, I like stopped playing music and was kind of open to like any sort of career. I kind of like stopped pursuing being a professional musician, and then halfway through university I met three people and we started a band, and then being a musician did become my life, which is what I wanted to do more than anything when I was 16. But when I was like 19 or 20, it was not something I was pursuing.
Cool. First song you bought from a record store?
It's funny because like this one I've been asked so many times, like, relative. Like, the other ones I don't think I've been asked any time before. But so the first record, the first album I bought, like, and it was with my parents' money, but it was the first time I was like, listen, I really want to buy this record. was Queen, classic Queen, and it was specifically for Bohemian Rhapsody, and it was because of Wayne's World, and I wasn't allowed to see Wayne's World the movie, but I was allowed to see, they would show the video of like them like singing in the car to Bohemian Rhapsody, and I just thought it was so, it's such a funny scene, even now, like if I, you know, I'll watch it every so often, it's just such a funny scene. So that's the first record I bought.
Wicked. Was it re-released then in the States? Cause it was in the UK and I think it might have gone to number one again in the UK.
I would believe
around
that.
World.
Yeah. I think that there was, my memory's getting a little hazy, but I feel like there was like a new music video or something that was kind of cut to the Wayne's World. So yeah. It had this like huge, second life, which,
yeah.
It's kind of like, it's, I think about like, how, like, right now, some songs will go, like, viral on TikTok, like, randomly that are, like, 10 or 15 years old.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's, like, the 90s version of it is, like, like, Wayne's World is, like, the TikTok video that made Bohemian Rhapsody go viral or whatever. Yeah. You know, you didn't think about it in those terms then, but it's, like, the same thing happening, essentially.
And so, how important were record shops for you back then, and as an artist, how important are they to you now?
They were important then, definitely. I mean, I would have, at that age, when you're 8 or 9 years old, you're going to the kind of more like corporatized version of that, and so I would be going to Tower Records. And I still, you know, Tower Records is still a brand in Japan, and like when I'm in Tokyo, I do love going to the Tower Records in Shibuya and like putting out my first record, first solo record. Like when I think about a big moment for me, it was actually like being in the Tower Records in Shibuya and like seeing my record, The Names, like have a little like display, and like thinking about like the Tower Records I would shop at on Central Avenue in Yonkers, New York. So that was kind of the version of it then. When I got into high school and I would go into the city more and play music, I would definitely go to a lot of the independent record shops like Generation Record on St. Mark Street. So yeah, they're very important. They're still super important now. I think that like my label asked if I wanted to do, or actually it was my manager who had the idea of doing like a special like burgundy edition of my record for independent record stores. And I was extremely into that idea because I do think, you know, independent record stores are a lifeblood. And I think that like they should be supported as much as possible. And, you know, I interned one summer for like a mail order record store called InSound in New York. Like, no, that's very important to me.
Okay. Well, let's move forward a little bit. And for track five, the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing.
Yeah, so I did not go to like clubs very much when I was growing up, like culturally in suburban New York, it was not something I did. I would go, sometimes in New York, there was like a club called Rafifi that I would go to when I was in college. I'm only thinking of this as I talk out loud, so this is not the answer that I give, but like there was, I have a good memory of like, and you know, they would have, this would have been like 2005, so they would have had 2004. They would have had like a kind of like hipstery, like not any like allegiance to any one genre. It wasn't like total techno or total house music. So I do remember like dancing to Gigantic by the Pixies. Like,
nice.
And, you know, kind of like, you know, it was like a version of indie dance, like a New York version of indie dance, which there's obviously like a rich history of that in the UK. Mm-hmm. But so when I did do DJing, I did college radio, and I would also like go and like play at student events and things like that. And I DJed a lot that way, but, kind of around the time that Vampire Weekend's second record, Contra, came out, I got like really into DJing and playing house and techno and like mixing and the kind of like craft of it. And a song that I think about a lot from that era is a song called Yearning by this duo called Black Van that was put out by DFA Records. And it's just this really beautiful, you know, it's wordless but nostalgic electronic track. And like I'll listen to it periodically. And it's just also like, you know, it's tailor-made for club use. Like the first, you know, 45 seconds or so is just like this like simple drum beat loop, like typical house, like, you know, four on the floor backbeat, and then these kind of like romantic 80s big grand chords come in, and it has a very, very long breakdown and a really, really satisfying kind of like drop in an arty way when the beat comes in at the end. And I just think of it when I think about that time in my life and DJing and playing in clubs, that's kind of the song I think about the most.
Wonderful. Well, let's take you back home for track six. Chris, I'm going to ask you a favorite song from an artist from your home county.
Oh, is it home count? Oh, was it county? Oh, I said...
It can be country. You'll
misread
be about the 150th person that said country instead of county, so you're in good company, mate.
Oh, man. Home
I need to... I really do... And I've said this on about 50 episodes now. I really need to readdress the word canty on the questions when I send them, because everyone thinks country.
Yeah, I just I want to think of some.
Yeah, who are you going to have for country anyway? I'm curious.
My country was going to be "Sing a Simple Song" by Sly and the Family Stone.
Oh, wonderful!
Which is. Yeah, like Stand is one of my favorite records. I love so much Sly and the Family Stone, but that song is just so iconic, incredible groove, incredible vocals. And I guess the reason why I picked it partially is that on my new record, I like in general making references to other artists and other songs and stuff like that, but this album, I kind of pared that back, and it's a little bit less, like, referential lyrically. There's still a couple moments here and there, but the kind of, the first verse of the first song references this song, Sing a Simple Song, and, I don't know, I love I love the meaning of it, Sing a Simple Song. There's just something, like, comforting about that, you know, 1970s America was in complete upheaval, and the idea through the chaos of, you know, singing a simple song just as a phrase, and the song's obviously about way more than just that. There's something that I love about that.
Well, I'm going to put you on the spot, which is the thing that you said. I don't know how people would do this if they had to get put on the spot. So if you are going to go home county, hometown, what are you going to go for?
It's so hard because...
Who's in the shortlist? Who's in the running for it?
Bands, I mean, Westchester County, New York, I have to Google. I don't even know if any bands, like, started in Westchester County. Let me just look very quickly. Because there might, you know, there'll be some members of bands. Yeah, it's all like, God.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
It's all, let me just see. God. Like, it's tricky. This is like the hardest question of my life, I think. Because like, yeah, there are elements of, like, there's a iconic venue in a town called Porchester called the Capitol Theater that, like, Grateful Dead would always play at. That's obviously Grateful Dead are not a Westchester band, but that's Westchester culture. Come to think of it, I know... There was a, there's like a college, a state college called Purchase, SUNY Purchase, which is in Westchester County, which I took a math class once when I was in high school, like to take some advanced math. But I do know that, like Mitski went there and like she recorded at least one or two of her albums at SUNY Purchase. Now I have no idea if she identifies as being a Westchester artist. I have no idea what Westchester means. It's just like literally something like I was reading about her record and I saw that it was recorded in Westchester. It was two records ago, definitely. But so I guess I'll go with her. She's okay with that.
Yeah, I'll let you have that. I'll put you on the spot.
That's
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Right, for your final track, you get to play DJ now, and it's a song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
So when I did college radio, I really I loved getting into kind of more esoteric things, and I would. There's like a record store that's no longer with us, sadly, based in San Francisco called Aquarius. And every week they would like write these long reviews of like 50 new releases. And it was mostly like pretty esoteric stuff. And a lot of it would be like stuff that I never really connected with. Like there would be like 20 like sludge metal albums that week. Like fun, like that there's so much stuff there. But so I'd always read it and read about new stuff that was coming out. And through that, I got really into this Finnish record label called Fonal Records, F-O-N-A-L. And I don't know if they're still active, but they put out two records by this all-instrumental group that I really loved called... they were called Shogun Kunitoki. So that's S-H-O-G-U-N-K-U-N-I-T-O-K-I. I think they're Finnish and not Japanese, but they were called Shogun Kunitoki. And the first song on their first record is just this very cool instrumental piece called Montezuma. The reason why I picked it and why it came to mind is that on my new record, I was very, very lucky. I got to record, and I didn't realize it before I got to the studio, but I got to record in Damon Albarn's personal studio for 2 days. And he had, I mean, I got to use his toys, which was like, and you know, like I'm a huge fan of his. It was like my favorite couple of days I've ever spent in a recording studio. But one of his toys that I got to use was his Farfisa organ. And I had this kind of vague idea for one of the songs that we were working on, a song called Cast Noir, of like having these kind of like big crashing chords at the end. And when I played the Farfisa, I was like, oh, this reminds me a bit of that like random Finnish band I loved like 10 years ago, like or 15 years ago, Shogun Kunitoki. And so I was just like thinking of that when I was like putting these sounds at the end of this track, and like I don't know, it's a song that like was kind of a journey, and I didn't necessarily, it wasn't like my favorite on the record when I finished it. And it's the one that, like, the most people, like, friends and stuff who I've played the record for have said is their favorite song on it. And I think part of it is that it has a very, like, big-sounding ending. And I think I have Damon Albarn and Shogun Kunitoki to thank for that, for making me pick up a Farfisa and put it on the record.
Wonderful. Well, we put together a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast with all your song choices and some of the other records that we've spoke about today. As we're getting close to a new year, and hopefully a new year that's going to involve some more freedom and some, yeah, being able to go and hug your friends again. What are you looking forward to personally, and what's going to be happening professionally with the new record?
Both personally and professionally, I'm very excited to have this record come out. It comes out on January 29th. And, you know, it got mixed over the summer, but I really did finish recording it, like, right when I got home from Australia in January. So to have sat on a record for a year is not my favorite thing. So having it out there, having people listening to it, is in the near term something I'm just like really looking forward to, just like having it out there will be, I don't know, it's just I always love releasing music, and putting out the record will be like just very satisfying in and of itself. I'm very excited both on a personal level for vaccines and you know, people getting vaccinated and being safe and squashing this virus. And I think that I'm hopeful that in the long term we'll, you know, bound together. It's I've been watching, you know, I guess that was last week you guys started vaccinating people. I found myself getting very emotional reading about that. I was watching footage of vaccines getting put on planes here in America, and found myself getting surprisingly emotional about that. And it's put me in a very good mood in general. So I look forward to, yes, being able to hug my friends, being able to gather, being able to be in the same room with people I love. I'm looking forward to seeing my parents, who I have not seen. There's so much to look forward to. I feel very hopeful for the new year. And in terms of playing shows, it's in this weird place where I would love to be. I mean, I guess I kind of said it a little bit earlier. I would love to be getting in a room with other people and playing the album for them. But I have no idea right now if I'm going to tour this record or not. And it's going to kind of just depend on scheduling and whenever it is safe for people to get into a small club together. And, I think that those kinds of things are going to sort of happen last. So would I love to be finishing up a tour in Europe in mid-December this time next year? I absolutely would love to. Can I say that that's happening with any degree of certainty? I cannot.
Okay. Chris, it's been an absolute delight chatting to you. Thank you so much for your time today. For people that want to keep up to speed on any developments with you know, gigs and the record coming out, where's the best place to follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter or Instagram. It's my last name backwards, Oyab, OIAB. And then I do have a Facebook page. I mean, I update everything, but if there is a tour, that info will be on any of those platforms.
Wonderful. Chris, have a lovely Christmas and all the best for the new year.
Thank you. You too. This was such a pleasure, Stu.
Oh, thanks loads, mate. There you go. What a lovely man. Really, really enjoyed that. I hope you've got as much joy listening as I did having that chat with Chris. Go and check out the new album and go give him a follow on the socials that he mentioned. yeah, I'll be back next time. In the meantime, go and explore the back catalogues. And if you've rinsed all 200 or so episodes of the stuff that gets put out on your Acast, Spotify and iTunes and all of them places, why not head over to the Patreon, where you'll find there's another 200 episodes there. And yeah, and by going over and subscribing to the Patreon page, which I think will cost you about 79p a week, you get 4 weekly episodes over there and video episodes, loads of other stuff. So yeah, go and watch. There's a little video over there and it just tells you all about it and what you're going to get. And you can find out about that and anything else to do with this podcast at www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. I'm back next time. Have a lovely week. Much love. See you soon. Bye-bye. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year. And they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk. Official sponsors of Off the Beaten Track podcast.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.